You're listening to History for Christian Teens, the podcast where we examine historical people, places, and events through the lens of the Bible, drawing meaningful lessons that we can apply to our own lives as believers. This podcast is designed for middle and high school age students, but mom and dad and everyone else, you're invited to listen in too. This broadcast is brought to you by the Ultimate Homeschool Podcast Network. Welcome back to the History for Christian Teens podcast. I'm your host, Crystal Niehoff.
And I'm your co-host, Kevin Niehoff. Thank you so much for listening in today. On today's podcast, we explore the life and ministry of a man who held the offices of a priest, a prophet, and became one of Israel's greatest judges. That great man was Samuel of the Old Testament.
This account comes from 1 Samuel chapters 1 through 25. In 1 Samuel chapter 1, we read about a woman named Hannah who was barren and prayed fervently for a child. She vowed that if the Lord would give her a son, he would be dedicated to the Lord all the days of his life. Hannah was married to Elkanah, a member of the priestly tribe of Levi. God heard Hannah's prayers and blessed her with a son, whom she named Samuel. Because of Samuel's priestly heritage, this later qualified him by Jewish law to perform the sacrifices as a priest. Samuel lived between 1105 to 1030 BC, and his name means name of God. After Samuel was older, Hannah took him to the tabernacle to dedicate him to the service of the Lord, placing him in the care of Eli, the priest. We read her words in 1 Samuel 1:27 through 28, which she says, "I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life he will be given over to the Lord."
Samuel, even though he grew up in the tabernacle, which was created as a holy place to worship God, it was anything but. The Bible tells us that Eli's sons were known by all to be wicked men who did not know the Lord. So this was not exactly the best or safest environment for Samuel to grow up in. However, as we read in 1 Samuel 2:26, the boy Samuel continued to grow in stature and in favor with the Lord and with people. Things were so evil that because of the wickedness of Eli's sons and because he allowed it to continue in the house of God, one of Samuel's first tasks was to tell Eli, his mentor, that God had judged his family for this reason.
After Eli and his sons die as a result of God's judgment, Samuel was then recognized as Israel's new spiritual leader. He becomes known as a reliable and trustworthy prophet of God because each of his prophecies were fulfilled as spoken. In fact, 1 Samuel 7:15 tells us that Samuel continued to serve the Lord all the days of his life because of Samuel's obvious close relationship with the one true God. The people of Israel turned from their false gods and returned to the Lord so that Samuel would pray for them. 1 Samuel 7 verse 3 tells us that Samuel said to the Israelites, "If you are returning to the Lord with all your heart, then rid yourselves of the foreign gods and commit yourselves to the Lord and serve him only, and he will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines."
Samuel was a priest, prophet, and judge of Israel. 1 Samuel 7, 16 through 17 closes the chapter by telling us that Samuel, from year to year, he went on a circuit from Bethel to Gilgal to Mizpah, judging Israel in all those places. But he always went back to Ramah, where his home was, and there he also held court for Israel. He built an altar there to the Lord.
So back in those days, one of the key roles of a judge was to deliver people from foreign oppressors. As Samuel prays for the people, and as he prophesied would happen, the people fight the Philistines, who are invading their land, and the Lord gives them the victory. During the remainder of Samuel's lifetime, the Philistines don't threaten Israel again. Sadly, though, although Samuel was a godly man and a great spiritual leader, his sons were not, and so the people of Israel rejected them as judges over them. Instead, the people called for a king to be appointed to lead them. The nations around them all had kings, and the people of Israel wanted to be just like them. Samuel tries to discourage them, and then he prayed to the Lord. Reading now from 1 Samuel 8, 7 through 22, in response to Samuel's prayer,
the Lord told him, "Listen to all that the people are saying to you. It is not you they have rejected, but they have rejected me as their king, as they have done from the day I brought them up out of Egypt until this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so they are doing to you. Now listen to them, but warn them solemnly, and let them know what the king who will reign over them will claim as his rights." Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking him for a king.
He said, "This is what the king who will reign over you will claim as his rights. He will take your sons and make them serve with his chariots and horses, and they will run in front of his chariots. Some he will sign to be commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties, and others to plow his ground and reap his harvest, and still others to make weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his attendants. He will take a tenth of your grain and of your vintage and give it to his officials and attendants. Your male and female servants and the best of your cattle and donkeys he will take for his own use. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his slaves. When that day comes, you will cry out for relief from the king you have chosen, but the Lord will not answer you in that day."
But the people refused to listen to Samuel. "No," they said, "we want a king over us. Then we will be like the other nations, for a king to lead us and to go out before us and fight our battles." When Samuel heard all that the people said, he repeated it before the Lord. The Lord answered, "Listen to them and give them a king."
1 Samuel chapters 9 and 10, we read that Samuel anoints the first king. God clearly identifies Saul as the one he's chosen for this job. We read the account of when Saul was introduced to the people in 1 Samuel 10, 23 through 25. They brought him out, and as he stood among the people, he was a head taller than any of the others. Samuel said to all the people, "Do you see the man the Lord has chosen? There is no one like him among all the people." Then the people shouted, "Long live the king!" Samuel explained to the people the rights and duties of kingship. He wrote them down on a scroll and deposited it before the Lord. Then Samuel dismissed the people to go to their own homes.
However, it wasn't long before Saul becomes a great disappointment, disobeying God's commands time after time. Finally, after his patience wore thin, the Lord said to Samuel, as we read in 1 Samuel 15:11, "I regret that I have made Saul king because he has turned away from me and has not carried out my instructions." Samuel was angry and he cried out to the Lord all that night.
In 1 Samuel 15:17 through 26, we read that early the next morning, Samuel went to meet Saul. Samuel said, "Although you were once small in your own eyes, did you not become the head of the tribes of Israel? The Lord anointed you as king over Israel. He sent you on a mission saying, 'Go and completely destroy those wicked people, the Amalekites. Wage war against them until you have wiped them out.' Why did you not obey the Lord? Why did you pounce on the plunder and do evil in the eyes of the Lord?"
"But I did obey the Lord," Saul said. "I went on the mission the Lord assigned me. I completely destroyed the Amalekites and brought back Agag, their king. The soldiers took sheep and cattle from the plunder, the best of what was devoted to God, in order to sacrifice them to the Lord your God at Gilgal."
But Samuel replied, "Does the Lord delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as much as in obeying the Lord? To obey is better than sacrifice. To heed is better than the fat of rams. For rebellion is like the sin of divination, and arrogance like the evil of idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has rejected you as king."
Then Saul said to Samuel, "I have sinned. I violated the Lord's command and your instructions. I was afraid of the men, and so I gave in to them. Now I beg you, forgive my sin. Come back with me so that I may worship the Lord." But Samuel said to him, "I will not go back with you. You have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you as king over Israel."
Soon thereafter, although the Bible doesn't give us a time frame, The Lord sends Samuel to the house of Jesse because he chose one of his sons to be the next king of Israel. 1 Samuel chapter 16 tells us that Samuel did as the Lord instructed. When Samuel saw Jesse's son Eliab, he thought to himself, "This surely must be the one God has chosen." But verse 7 tells us that the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him." The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.
Samuel, one by one, looked over each of Jesse's sons. In the end, the one the Lord had chosen to anoint as king was the youngest son, David, who was out tending sheep. Samuel waited for David to come back from the field. Verses 12 through 13 give this account of David's return that day. The Lord then said to Samuel, "Rise and anoint him. This is the one." So Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David.
During his lifetime, Samuel was a priest, a prophet, and one of Israel's greatest judges. He was wise and devout, had a close relationship with the Lord, and heard his voice from an early age. He spent his life serving the Lord and the people of God, truly having their best interest at heart, clear to the end of his earthly life. Exactly how old he was when he died, we don't know. In 1 Samuel 12, verse 2, Samuel says of himself that he was old and gray, but his actual death isn't recorded until chapter 25.
His age at the time he was called home to heaven isn't nearly as important as the life he lived out for the Lord. So, what are some takeaways from Samuel's life that we can learn and apply to our lives as believers?
Life application number one, obedience is better than sacrifice. In an article on iBelieve.com entitled, "Why is Obedience Better Than Sacrifice?" author Brenda Rogers shares this story. Motherhood has also helped me to view discipline in my life differently. Like most rebellious children, I've resented God's discipline and spent a lot of time bumping boundary lines in order to stay out of trouble. However, when I'm disciplining my girls, I see God's heart for discipline more clearly. This has become most obvious through the disciplining of my strong-willed daughter, who offers a third choice anytime I give her two. For instance, the time I told her she could either have cookies or ice cream for dessert, and she chose candy. I explained to her that candy wasn't a choice. She then asked what the consequence for eating the candy anyway would be and weighed her options to see if the candy was worth it. Once she made the right choice and listened to me, I asked her why. She simply told me she didn't want to get into trouble. The purpose of my question was to see the state of her heart. Sacrifice and obedience reveal two different conditions of the heart, as the story of Saul and Samuel reveals in 1 Samuel 15, end quote.
The author then gives these two reasons that obedience is better than sacrifice. One, sacrifice comes from obligation, but the root of obedience is love. Two, we make sacrifice about ourselves, but obedience is about God. In addition to 1 Samuel 15:22, the Bible tells us in other ways that obedience is more desired by God than sacrifice. John 14:15, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments." Proverbs 21:3, "To do righteousness and justice is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice." Romans 5:19, "For as by the one man's disobedience the many were made sinners, so by the one man's obedience the many will be made righteous." In this verse, the author of Romans compares Adam's fall into sin due to his disobedience and Christ's death and resurrection because of his obedience to the Father.
The next lesson we can learn from Samuel and life application number two, God is more concerned with the condition of the heart than anything else. We see this in the Lord's replacement of Eli's priesthood onto Samuel rather than Eli's sons, which was the custom of the day. We also see this when God chooses David, the youngest son of Jesse, rather than his oldest, through which titles are customarily passed down.
Throughout the Bible, we see how the Lord uses those whose hearts are right with him over family lineage, wealth, prestige, abilities, or physical appearance. There's a saying that I've heard said a few different ways, but basically goes something like this: God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies those he calls. 2 Corinthians 3:5 explains, "Not that we are competent in ourselves to claim anything for ourselves, but our competence comes from God."
As 1 Samuel 16, verse 7 says, "The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outer appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." Others, or even we ourselves, may think that we can't be used by God because of excuses like, "I'm too awkward, I'm too young, I'm not smart enough, I'm too poor." But all that doesn't matter to God. If your heart is right before Him, He will equip you to do what He's called you to do. Obey His call and leave the results up to Him.
Well, that's our show for today. Thanks for listening in. Please join us next week when we take a closer look into Israel's first king. Links to everything we've mentioned today can be found in our show notes at historyforchristianteens.com.
Got questions, comments, or prayer requests? Kevin and I would love to hear from you. Email us at historyforchristianteens@gmail.com. Have a blessed week. Thanks for listening in today. If you like this podcast, please be sure to subscribe and give us a star rating on your favorite podcast app. You can follow us on Facebook too. Links to this and all the other resources mentioned during the podcast today can be found in our show notes at historyforchristianteens.com. We hope you'll join us again next week for another thought-provoking and insightful lesson in History for Christian Teens.